Get help now. Don't wait until the money is gone. This is the advice from the principal researcher of a study out this morning which has found counselling can have long-lasting benefits as a treatment for gambling disorders. It's based on a randomised clinical trial with 227 people who were taking part in the Salvation Army's Oasis treatment. The research was led by AUT's Gambling and Addictions Research Centre with help from researchers at Flinders University in Australia and Canada's University of Calgary. It looked at the effectiveness of two gambling interventions within a service setting, cognitive behavioural therapy and motivational interviewing. Participants were assessed before, during and at 1 and 2 years past the end of their treatment. Associate Professor Maria Bellringer is director of the AUT Gambling and Addictions Research Centre, also the principal researcher of this study. Ata Marie, welcome Maria.
Marina Kaffin,
so
how are you?
I'm really good, thanks. So first just explain succinctly, if you would, for us, the significance of this study compared to others that have been done. Is it particularly comprehensive?
Yes, this was a randomised controlled trial, which is one of the gold standard research ways of assessing the effectiveness of treatments, because it randomly assigns participants to treatment, which reduces selection and allocation bias. It's the type of trial that is used to test new pharmaceuticals, for example, when you have the drug and the placebo. Obviously, we didn't have a placebo in this case. We had two treatments that we were testing. Very few randomized controlled trials are conducted because they're very expensive to conduct and they can be quite time consuming. So that makes this study important in the first place. The next reason that this study is so important is because a lot of the few randomized controlled trials that have been conducted in terms of assessing effectiveness of gambling treatments have been done in more laboratory style conditions where researchers will set up a clinic for treatment and then will advertise for participants, you know, do you have a gambling problem? Would you like treatment? Would you like to come and trial these treatments with us? Whereas in our study, we worked in a real life setting. So we collaborated with the Salvation Army Oasis Centres, who were absolutely brilliant. We trained their counsellors across the country and their clinics across the country to deliver the treatments to the specific rigorous specifications of this trial. So we were assessing the effectiveness of the treatment in a real world setting with people who have all the issues that go along with them seeking treatment for gambling.
Let's talk about the two different trials if we can, Maria. But first, was there a commonality in the type of gambling addiction or what they were addicted to? I understand pokies is very prominent.
Yes, most people who seek help for issues with gambling are seeking help with because they have problems with the pokie machines. They are the most harmful form of gambling in this country, and in fact in every country that has the same type of machines. So we know from Ministry of Health statistics that about 60% of people who seek help from their gambling experience harms from these pokie machines, either in pubs and clubs, a majority actually in pubs and clubs, also in casinos. And that was the case with the people who were seeking help from the Oasis treatment services. The majority of those had issues with the pokie machines.
So let's talk about the different types of treatment. And what were you wanting to compare and contrast? Were you wanting just to learn the effectiveness of different options for treatment?
Cognitive behavioural therapy or CBT and motivational interviewing are two of the gold standard treatments, not just for gambling, for gambling issues, but for all sorts of other issues such as sleeplessness, smoking cessation, substance use, those sorts of things. So we wanted to trial those treatments because they're very commonly used in this country, and we wanted to just see how effective they were with our population. But what we did was, you mentioned earlier, we collaborated with experts in Flinders University and the University of Calgary. Now, Flinders University has experts in who have developed a cognitive behavioural therapy with exposure therapy specifically for gambling treatment. So we worked with those researchers and clinicians to develop that CBT and exposure therapy for our trial. And similarly, in the University of Calgary, there are experts who have developed a motivational interviewing treatment specifically for gambling. And so that's what we used again. We really wanted to test two commonly used treatments, but which had been tailored and designed specifically for gambling treatment within our population.
Okay. Can we talk first, again, just as succinctly as is possible, about what happened in each of the two trials, what people experienced, and just how intensive it was, and then let's look at the results, please.
Yes, of course. So cognitive behavioural therapy, in brief, it's a combination of cognitive therapy, so adjusting people's thoughts and beliefs, and behavioural therapy, so adjusting their behaviours. And these two, cognitive and behavioural therapy, are used together to challenge erroneous beliefs and to guide the client to change the behaviours that have led them to the problematic behaviours, and then to maintain the problematic outcomes, so to change their beliefs. It's usually a longer term approach, and in our study there were 10 sessions of the CBT provided over a 3-month period. So basically it taught the underlying mechanisms of gambling, such as the concept of randomness, false perceptions of skill, and explained about chance and odds. We included, as part of that therapy, exposure therapy, which is, as it sounds, gradually exposes people to the gambling that causes them harm, with the aim of them not being triggered to gamble. So, for example, we might have, and it depended from client to client, but might have started with showing pictures of poker machines, and then progressing, when the client could see pictures and not feel anxious or the urge to gamble, then moving to including sounds and lights, and finally culminating in actually the counsellor taking the client to a pub, sitting at a pokie machine so that the client could do that without feeling the need to gamble, without feeling stressed or anxious. The other treatment, the motivational interviewing, is a much briefer approach. In our study, it was one face-to-face session with five shorter telephone sessions, again spread out over that 3-month period. Much briefer approach. It basically uses techniques to engage a person to change from ambivalence in their behaviour to facilitating a change in their behaviour. So it's a collaborative relationship between the counsellor and the client, and the aim is to elicit a person's motivation to change. And again, our treatment also included a self-help workbook that the client could work through in their own pace, and then they would discuss this with the counsellor in the telephone sessions after that first face-to-face session.
So what were the results?
Well, we thought that the CBT treatment with the cue exposure therapy, being the more intensive treatment, would have better outcomes for clients. We thought that they would, that the participants who were assigned to that group would just have better outcomes, would have better, reduced gambling, less motivation to urge, more control over gambling, better quality of life, and all of those things. So we were a little bit surprised, because we found that actually both treatments were, both of them were equally effective, as it were. They both had reduced negative effects. So both reduced people in both groups reduced their gambling behaviours, had more control over their gambling behaviours. The negative effects in their life reduced, their quality of life improved. So we actually saw no differences, which to us shows that really one size does not fit all, that it's important that, but I think that there are a variety of treatments out there, and people can get the treatments that they need to seek help, that they need for helping them.
Overall, what does success look like? I think they stayed, a reasonably high percentage, stayed in the trial for a whole year, right? And others dropped out. I'm curious to know what you consider successes. Is it sustaining the 12 months? Do you go back and check later what has happened? How do we know the efficacy of it beyond the immediate trial?
Yeah, For us, and this was another point of difference with our trial to other trials, very few actually measure long-term effects. Most just look at what happens after treatment finishes, immediately after treatment finishes, and then maybe after after 6 months or 12 months. We followed up these people for 2 years to look at those longer term effects to see whether, you know, the treatment effects may have been short term, immediate. They've had treatment. Oh, yes, I'm going to reduce my gambling or stop my gambling, depending on what they wanted to do. But then there's a lot of relapse. We didn't see that. So in that regard, we found that our treatment outcomes with the reduced gambling, the improved improved quality of life, reduced negative effects, that continued on for 2 years, which shows that these treatments at least are effective for a couple of years. You mentioned dropouts, and that we did have dropouts. That was not unexpected. Gambling treatment, in fact, substance use treatments, there were high dropout rates anyway at treatment services, and people drop out for all sorts of reasons. So that was expected in this study. But what we found was that with the participants who were in the motivational interviewing treatment, there were fewer dropouts for those participants, more continued right to the end of treatment, and in fact, a few wanted additional sessions compared to the CBT treatment, where more people dropped out early on. And we wonder whether that is because the motivational interviewing treatment was one face-to-face session, and then the rest of the sessions were by telephone, which then reduces all those barriers of people who struggle to get to a service, for example, in a rural area where it might be a long way to get to the gambling treatment service, or for people with children where it's difficult to get childcare, people with transport problems and those sorts of things.
Overall, what are the key takeaways for people providing treatment?
I think, you know, that they should, the treatment providers should carry on doing what they're doing. We have shown that two of the most commonly used treatments, CBT and motivational interviewing, are effective in the long term. But that's not to say that other counselling modalities that may be used by some counsellors and therapists are not effective. They just haven't been tested. So I would say, you know, we know that if there's a good relationship between the counsellor and a client, then the client is likely to have good outcomes. So I would, my takeaway would be, for anyone who is experiencing harms from gambling, please do seek help as soon as possible, because there's quite a lot of help out there. The services are all free. And if you don't want to go to a professional immediately, get help from a trusted support person, a family member or a friend, whānau, because these gambling services are also free and available to family and affected others of someone experiencing gambling harm.
Thanks, Maria.
So family members can go as well.
That's encouraging. Thanks very much. Maria Bellringer is Director, AUT Gambling and Addictions Research.